think that overall, just having the information and practicing it improves your emotional mastery in a very, very meaningful way. And it helps you to be a better professional. It helps you be a better teammate. It helps you be a better human being, a better family person.
Welcome to the Leadership Junkies podcast, brought to you by Cartavera, the leadership development ecosystem that helps you grow your people, grow your business, and grow your life. We're back here with a very unique guest. Karen Weinstock is with us. The title is Emotional Mastery: Strategies and Tools to Grow Your Relationships, Your Business, and Yourself. Karen is such an interesting guest. Her day job is she is a lawyer, an entrepreneurial lawyer, has her own immigration law firm. She's also in the midst of launching a new venture related to that industry, but she also wrote a book on dating, a book called Matched. And what you're going to hear is that there's so many comparisons or correlations between dating and business growth and leadership, about authenticity. She's going to talk a lot about this concept of emotional mastery. You're going to love that conversation, and you're going to be amazed at the ways in which a book about dating and ways to do dating and relationships differently translate so directly into how do you grow your team, how do you grow yourself, how do you grow your business. It's going to be a unique and fascinating conversation. Welcome to the Leadership Junkies podcast, where we explore leadership, business, and personal growth to help you grow your business and live a richer life. We're your hosts, Jeff Dischwitz
and Craig Matthews. We believe that leaders have to put their people first. And if you don't have time to grow your people, then you're not leading.
Get ready for conversations that will challenge your thinking and help you transform your leadership and your business.
Welcome to your bigger business and bigger life.
I got to tell you, I am so excited about this guest. Karen and I have had a chance to talk before this. She actually was on a recent cocktail happy hour as well. You're going to hear about her book. I'm not going to give it away right now, but I'll just give you the hint. It has nothing to do with her profession, which is one of the things I love about it. But Karen has a fascinating background. She is from Israel. And I got to read this because this is just something she came here to the U.S. She couldn't get a job without a visa. And she couldn't get a visa without a job. Does that sound like an issue? So no big shock that Karen is actually a practicing attorney. Her firm is called Weinstock Immigration Lawyers that help immigrants achieve their American dreams and worked with the organizations that hire these people to help navigate what can be a very complex process, obviously. Yeah. Complex and confusing. She went to the Hebrew University, got her law degree there. If you don't know, it's one of the top law schools in the world. But Karen is here to not talk about just law or immigration, but about entrepreneurship. And she's doing it in a unusual profession as an entrepreneurial lawyer, former entrepreneurial lawyer. Most lawyers aren't entrepreneurs, frankly. They are practitioners who sometimes have their own firm. But as I'm sure we're going to learn, that's not the same thing as being an entrepreneur. So Karen has a lot of interest. She's going to be fun and engaging. I know it. So welcome, Karen.
Thank you, Jeff, with such an introduction. It's great. Great to be here.
Glad no to pressure. You. Just be brilliant. Just be brilliant. Right? Brilliant and funny. That's it. So give us a little bit of the Karen Weinstock backstory.
Well, I went to law school in Israel and into my third year of law school. And I actually also served in the army before that. And that's another interesting fact about me. In my third year of law school, I decided I don't want to practice law in Israel. And so it was a little bit of a shock, both to me and my parents. And like, are you kidding me? What are you going to do with your life? Blah, blah, blah. And so I said, well, I'm still going to practice law, but somewhere else. So I was thinking UK, US, I don't know. And by pure luck or divine intervention, or both, I had a relative of my mom's came for a visit to Israel. She stayed with us during that summer, and she basically invited me to stay with her in New York City for as long as I needed to do whatever I wanted.
Wow.
So, and that was incredible. So I said, wow, New York City, that sounds exciting. And so I ordered those tapes from Barbary back in the day. So they sent a big box with tapes and in books. I studied for the bar exam and flew over, passed it, and the rest is history. I came here with two suitcases.
Well, let's go back and dig into some of that past. You mentioned your Army service, and some people may not know this, but that's required service in Israel, correct?
Yes, it is mandatory for women for 2 years and men 3 years. Yes.
And you served in a pretty benign part of the Army, correct?
So I was in military intelligence, and I don't want to kill you if I tell you what I did. But it was a great experience because I could really do things that were amazing at age 18.
Wow.
So instead of going to college and doing an undergrad and doing a lot of college parties, we really did things that could save lives. And it was very, very interesting.
Well, as I recall, you went right into immigration law when you started practicing here. And I'm not going to guess, but what drove that decision?
So actually I did a couple of years of corporate law in the beginning when I was in New York City, and I didn't like it very much. Mm. And I wanted more connections with the client and more impact on their lives, et cetera, et cetera. And then my first meeting with an immigration lawyer, his advice to me was either go back to school or go get married for papers. Both of them I wasn't going to do. So then the second time around, I looked for a better immigration lawyer and just really did my research before I hired the second one for my work visa. And so, and then he basically, a couple of years later, offered me a job. He said, you'll be great at immigration law. You have the perfect profile for it. And we need somebody. So little did he know, it was right before 9/11 and everything went haywire after that. But it's really been a passion of mine because I really did everything wrong the first few years
I
moved here. So yeah.
It's an interesting profession. I have a glancing blow at it in writing business plans for L1 and E5 or E2 visas. And so, you know, working with a lot of people trying to get into the United States and doing that through the business as the medium to do that, has that been shut down more recently?
It hasn't been shut down, but there's been a travel ban that was issued by the Trump administration for L visa holders.
Oh, really?
Yes. And there's also another travel ban that's related to COVID. So all of basically Western Europe is now under a COVID travel ban.
Wow.
So all those investors, and that's the majority of countries where the investors come from, are basically blocked from traveling here.
Mm.
So we have to use very creative solutions to make sure the visas are granted and they can travel. So it's very interesting.
Gotcha.
Well, I think a lot of people aren't familiar with it. I think it's pretty fascinating. I'm going to guess your clients are both the individuals who are looking for immigration services, but you also work with the companies.
Yes, that's correct.
Talk about those different needs and how you work with both those different client sets.
Sure. So we have the individual business owners, investors, people who want to use their resources and businesses to immigrate and to improve their lives and their children's lives from one country to another. And there's all kinds of nationalities in that bucket, anywhere from Western Europe, Latin America. For example, like we had a bunch of Venezuelans a few years ago when Chavez was there and money was confiscated, companies were assessed all kinds of crazy taxes. And so that was their only way of immigrating and just escaping that. And so if you have a business, if you have financial resources, there are usually better ways than your average Joe trying to immigrate from another country to the United States.
Yeah.
There is a lot of family-based immigration. So US citizens either meeting people abroad, living abroad, meeting a spouse and coming here. And we have a team that helps with that also. But the focus is on the business immigration side, which is basically using immigration in the work combination or a business or investment to immigrate to the United States. And so with employment-based, generally, we work with companies that are usually in technology, manufacturing, higher education. So we have a lot of universities and healthcare systems, because these types of businesses tend to hire a lot of foreign nationals. Technology is obvious. A lot of IT professionals are from India and China. And we really we have a huge need for those occupations here, and not enough Americans graduate from computer science programs. And we have over a billion in China, over a billion in India, and, right. and a lot of them do graduate from those STEM occupations. And universities, a lot of the professors and researchers are foreign born, and they get PhDs, again, especially in the sciences. And we have a lot of manufacturing companies and also healthcare companies that one of four out of every doctor in residency and fellowship programs in the United States is foreign educated and foreign born. So there's a lot of, especially rural hospitals, they can't get American doctors, and they use the immigration, so foreign doctors sponsoring them for visa and they later on green cards, so they can stay there for a long term and serve the population that's usually generally underserved.
Well, let's give everybody a little idea of the scale. You know, your business, and I'm going to keep calling it a business, not your practice, your business is not just you. And how many people, lawyers, do you have with your firm right now?
So the total people, including lawyers and staff in the U.S. is 14. And then I have another team in India of five people that actually help with back office software development, which is another entrepreneurial venture that came out of the law firm. And it's been very interesting to grow into that aspect of it and managing a team offshore.
Yeah, it is an interesting practice. I've had multiple software companies, and it's it can be quite interesting. But you know, we have now learned to use Zoom and other technologies to great benefit now.
Yes.
So that's your new venture, or newer venture, is in the software development, right?
Yes. So what frustrated me was that there wasn't a complete software product for lawyers. And while there are a lot of different softwares for law firms, there wasn't a solution to manage projects and processes and be more client friendly and make us more efficient as lawyers at the same time.
Okay.
So there's part one, which is to manage law firm, to manage attorneys that bill by the hour and all of that. But we're not, we're process oriented. So one of the differentiators, we all do flat fees. And so we want to be more efficient. We want to finish the case in the minimal time possible, because that's how we make more money and more profit, right? Versus a traditional law firm, they want to the case to drag on forever, because you get paid by the hour.
Gotcha. That is a big difference in the software if you're tracking by project base.
Right. And so we want to make more everything more efficient. So I basically sat down and figured out where the efficiencies can be made, where we've had issues in the past, you know, and I've had the 20 years experience for that, and where the clients can get an added benefit. And so with the combination of all those three, the software was born.
Nice.
And so it's been developed for the last 2 years. We are working with clients on it. And the huge benefit for the HR teams on the company side is they're able to see exactly what's going on in each of their employees' cases. What's been filed, what's missing, when it's approved. And a lot of clients, even large clients, you know, used to use Excel spreadsheets to track expirations of employees and things can fall through the cracks.
Yeah.
And so we don't want that. We want everything to be automated and be at one place. And if somebody forgets to update an Excel, then it's not going to be a problem and somebody's not going to expire.
That's brilliant, Karen.
And so is that, that is currently, it is being marketed not only with your clients, but are you commercializing that for other firms?
That's the next step. Right now we're just using it in-house, mm-hmm. but that's the next step, is to commercialize it.
Well, you clearly are an innovator, and let's just talk about, I guess, whether it's an innovation or a tangent, I want to make sure I mention it. I said this, she's starting to laugh already. She knows what's coming. So Karen is an author. She's an author. So she's an entrepreneur. She's got this incredible business experience. She creates new things. She does business differently in the law. And yet she wrote a book about dating. And it yes. is, I'll tell you, someone who's been in that world, it's a wonderful book. It is called mm-hmm. Unmatched. And I apologize, I don't remember the subtitle, Karen. What is that?
It's called Matched, From Dating Disasters to Dream Relationships. And it's been 2 years of writing in my free time. You know, I have a lot of free time. So,
Isn't that the way we design our businesses?
Well, you know, and I'm also a single mom. So I have a 10-year-old at home and she's with her dad every other weekend. So that's pretty much the time that I have for myself. A lot, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's just touch on that, because what's interesting about that is you wrote that book, because we've talked about it, and it is another, again, it's a great book. I really recommend it to anybody who's in the dating space. But you wrote that book not trying to build a business around it. You're not a dating coach. You don't want to be a dating coach, but you invested a lot of time. So talk about where did that book come from? What's the why behind that?
So it came from a very personal place. And when I got divorced, I didn't have any capacity to dating. I needed to heal. I needed to kind of take care of myself and kind of reassess. And before I got divorced, I went through about 3 years of marriage counseling and I don't know how many dating and relationship books to really understand what went wrong, how to try to fix the relationship, what makes relationship work, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. A big learning was, of course, my ex was incompatible with me, so there was really no hope. And you can't help somebody who doesn't want to help themselves, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there's a lot of learnings out of that. And at the same time, when I got out of the dating, got back into dating, things were remarkably different than 15 years ago. And so now everything is online. It's all app-based. Things are very superficial. People are lying, cheating, inauthentic, and some of them not... purposefully. Some people have a good intention when they do that, but it all leads into chaos and heartbreak and mismatches. And so I thought to myself, well, I don't have a lot of time to date. I need to condense my time and find good dates, because the first ones were not. I need to find compatible matches. And I just couldn't. And so I read some books that weren't very helpful. You know, all those superficial, how to send text he can't ignore, or, you know, five things you need to know about online dating.
Wow.
And there's a lot more than five things you need to know.
So, I'm so glad I'm not in that world.
And so I kind of developed my own system based on my knowledge from relationships and the marriage counseling that I attended and all the books and the knowledge that I had, a lot of business tools that I have been using in my business, because a lot of it has to do with sales and marketing. So you build a funnel, you want to attract a specific audience for your product or service, right? And then you go through the funnel with screening, because you don't want to sell to the entire world. You want to have your customer avatar, or you want to have your specific customers in mind when you're actually pitching them. And then if there's no fit, there's no need to waste valuable sales time in order to pitch to the wrong person who's never going to buy. Right. So that a lot of, for example, HR interviewing skills, when I have to hire team members and try to find a fit for the organization and the team and all that. So interviewing. So dating a lot is about interviewing and interviewing skills. And I basically developed my own system.
Transferable skills.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I refined it over time and it actually worked. So my first dates were horrible and they basically evolved into great dates. And they didn't all work out for whatever reason, but I've made friendships from it. I've made business partnerships from people I met on dates, and it's just been a great experience. And just having fun and completely be myself and be authentic, and that's one of the key learnings from my life in general, but specifically in the book, and how you do that.
Yeah.
Well, and I bring it up for a couple of reasons. One is to demonstrate your range and of interest, but the book itself is, and you just described it, you took business principles and brought into dating, which when I first heard that, when we talked, I thought, what's this going to be? But it works really well and it makes sense. And as you said, Craig, there's so many transferable skills. You could actually read this book in the context of taking a different approach to sales and business development and systemizing and hiring and all that. So I'm not necessarily saying go read this book to run your business, but if you don't read this book matched, you're going to get ideas on a different way to run your business. It really does. It's true.
Right. And for me, it's a very good, it has a lot of good personal development aspects in it. And not just, obviously it's focused towards dating and relationships, but there's a lot of key learnings about yourself and how do you improve? And also how can you improve yourself in the way that you portray yourself to the world?
That
so it could
so
be
good.
A business meeting. It could be employees. It could be anything. Not necessarily just dating. It's how do you show up and how do you play full out and how do you develop relationships? How do you cut things off amicably and nicely without ghosting people or without offending people and just build on good relationships and let all the riffraff and everything that's not, just let it go because you need to have focus.
That's so good. I think to me, some of the most attractive people are those who are confident, but not arrogant.
Right.
You know, they know their self-worth and they can be themselves. And when they're authentic, it's just a whole different world when you're talking to somebody like that, because then there's no filters, no masks in the way.
Right, absolutely. And if we all did that in life in general, and not just dating, life would be so much better.
Totally.
Yep. And well, I don't have to be everybody's favorite. I don't want to have 1,000 friends. It's not realistic.
Well, I'm glad you made that point because it's a dating book, but really it's about personal development. It's about leadership, about authenticity, and it's about doing that inside work that Craig and I talk about constantly. That's so fundamental to leadership. You talk about building trust and those relationships. So again, anybody, I encourage you to read the book, especially if you're in the dating world, but even if you're not, you're going to learn some things about yourself and you're going to learn some tools, which is what I love, some tactable, tangible tools you can use to do some of that inside work. That's what surprised me, frankly, Karen, not because I just didn't expect to see that. And it's rare that you find that. So it's a great book. Check it out, especially if you're in the dating world. Let's come back to entrepreneurship. You have chosen to be an entrepreneur. You continue to evolve. So like, what would you say? There's a lot of them out there. A lot of people out there who want to be entrepreneurs or aren't sure. What are some of the things they need to hear from you, Karen, about that journey?
So for me, I realized early on that I'm a bad employee.
Craig and I, our hands are going up. Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a great way to say it too. I'm a horrible employee.
And
not because I don't work hard and I don't have ambition and I don't have drive. It's the opposite. But the thing is that I rarely can sit still and indulge in the status quo. The corporate politics, the hierarchy, all of that is the opposite of who I am.
Yes.
And even in my own business, I don't care if it's my receptionist. If she has a great idea, let's go ahead and hear it and let's implement it.
Yes.
And so by by not being able to function in a traditional corporate environment, I had no choice but to be an entrepreneur, right? And I kind of realized, well, if I'm going to grind and work 80 hours a week and put all of myself in, I might as well just do it for myself instead of working for somebody else. And if I build, it's great. If I fail, at least I learn something.
Yes.
And I can do things my way, which are a little different because I'm very different.
Here's to the different people. Yay.
Steve Jobs says, here's to the crazy ones.
That's right. That's right.
Crazy. You're one of the crazy ones, Karen.
Yeah, absolutely. I am my own crazy. And that's it works great with some people and it doesn't with other people. And it's just fine. You just have to find your own crazy people to match with. That's it.
The one thing that I feel like not even, I don't fully know your businesses yet, but I know enough to say this. Some people get into, and I'm going to put in air quotes, entrepreneurship, but what they really created was a practice. Yeah. And you've created a business. So talk about some of the keys for you in going beyond just building a practice and building a business. What were some of the keys for that that people need to think about?
So the first thing is, I wasn't in love with the technical work. And a lot of, especially professional services, people like lawyers and doctors and CPAs and all kinds of engineers, they really are in love with the technical aspects of the job. Whether it's resolving a legal case or whether it's whatever they have to do technically. And I was never in love with that. What I was in love with is two things. Is the solving problems and the strategy piece that I was able to solve and be very creative and solve issues that were very complex. So I love that. And the second thing that I loved was trying to figure out a better way to do it. And I realized then I could hire people who could do the technical work and delegate all of the other stuff that I didn't like to do and I wasn't in love with and wasn't in my, let's say, zone of genius.
Yeah.
And delegate it. And it was very hard to do initially because I was a perfectionist and I had some control issues for sure and all of that. But as I've evolved in the, as a business owner, as an entrepreneur and all, I can't get leverage without other people doing other stuff. Yeah. There's only 24 hours and I can't do everything. And I don't want to do everything.
So let me ask you this question. Having been there in that space in the legal profession, Karen, that decision to do the handoffs and empower others, do you feel like that was a choice you made or was that choice forced on you? And what I mean is sometimes people get so much work. It's almost to the point that the only way to survive is to empower others and delegate. And some people struggle with, well, once I get more business, I'll do that. I'll get other people. So it's kind of a chicken and the egg question. How did you approach that?
I realized early on that I needed an assistant, a paralegal or assistant, because I hated filling out the forms. And I just, I knew that if I invest enough time and energy in business development, and I meet enough people and I do enough consultations and I'll get the new clients because I have their best interests and I have the knowledge, et cetera. So it was going to happen. And in the first year I hired a paralegal and it was a very difficult financial decision to make because I didn't have the money. I came to Atlanta basically knowing no one. And I had to develop the business myself. So I had a choice because I could have stayed there and getting stuck in doing everything myself. But I figured out that my time was better utilized in doing business development activities and hiring an assistant for, I don't know, $15 an hour than having me do her job and be all wiped out because I was doing 16-hour days.
Wow.
It's interesting you say that because I think that's a challenge many people face early. And I know I did as well in multiple businesses. And I know for myself and talking to other entrepreneurs, everyone agrees. They've all said, I would have hired my first support person earlier. And it was, and I hear what you're saying. It was that I really can't afford them yet, but I can't afford not to have them.
Yeah.
And I think so many people need to realize, yeah, it's uncertain. You don't know, is the money going to be there? But that's 100%. I've never heard someone say, yeah, I hired the support person too early.
Right. And you know, now there's such amazing platforms for that. There's all kinds of virtual assistants online. There's a website like Upwork where you can hire contractors for a fixed fee. It's just amazing that the world opened up, basically. I have people working for me in India, for example, and they get paid, like a graphic designer, for example, and they get paid a fraction of what I would pay a graphic designer in the United States. You know, so I pay monthly what I would pay hourly here.
Yeah, it's also nice to be able to have that flexibility of contractors versus full-time employees, at least at the start. You know, eventually, yeah, you want to capitalize on all of that person so that they really understand what's going on. Because once they marinate their head in your business, you know, they're much more valuable.
Right, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. But there, what I was saying is that there's definitely a lot more tools and a lot more options to hire people, even part-time as contractors, as you are getting started and you don't have a huge financial resources to get you out there. But if I, for example, if I wasted my time trying to do a design of an ad, for example, it would take me 10 hours and I would still not be able to do it half as well as somebody who I paid, I don't know, $100 to do the same thing. Right. So am I a $10 an hour employee? Or, you know,
that's a high opportunity cost.
Exactly. So even if you don't have that money yet, just think of yourself as making that $100 plus an hour or $200 plus an hour, and delegate as much as you can.
Let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors. I've been a Beta Gamma Sigma member for the last 20 years. If you're looking to hire, the right candidate is closer than you think. Beta Gamma Sigma is the International Business Honor Society, exclusively for students at the top of their class in the top 5% of business schools in the world. BGS members are academic achievers, skilled leaders, and experienced problem solvers, and their skills and experience extend beyond the classroom. They hold chapter leadership positions, attend global business summits, complete ethics trainings, and engage in world-class internships with top corporations. When you hire a Beta Gamma Sigma member, you are truly hiring the best in business. For more information, email bgshonors@betagammasigma.org to learn more about how to hire BGS members. Welcome back.
Karen, I'm going to refer to your book just as a reference point. It's clear from your book, Matt, you've done a lot of work on yourself and you continue to, right?
Yes.
You are very vulnerable in the book. And my question is, how has that worked? Well, two questions. Clearly you did it for the dating world, but how much of that was also designed to enhance you as a leader and a business owner? And how has it helped you become better and more effective as a leader and business owner doing that inside work?
Oh, that's been a game changer for sure. And it's been a process of the past 20 years, basically. And the Japanese have this principle. It's called Kaizen, continuous and never ending improvement. So it's a beautiful principle. And it's not, I'm not there where I want to be, but I'm so much better than I was yesterday and I'm so much better than I was 10 years ago. And so if as a leader and as a person also, I found hypocrisy to be one of the worst turnoffs. And so if people like, you know, do as I say, not do as I do kind of thing, it is a complete fallacy, right?
Yeah.
So I want to be that person who leads by example. And so if I'm not going to do something, I'm not going to ask somebody else to do it. And so the self-work helped me initially to learn how to delegate and release control. It taught me how to let go of perfectionism, which is another disease a lot of entrepreneurs are sick of, and it's making everybody else sick.
That's a great way of putting it.
Yeah, for sure, because you want to have a great product or a great service, but you can't, and you can strive for perfection, but you can't be perfect. And if you try to be perfect and you try to push your employees to be perfect, it's going to be a recipe for disaster. And so a lot of things were also, a lot of the personal journey was self-acceptance.
Totally.
And know thyself, so self-knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And emotional mastery, because a lot of people are not. They have no clue who they are. They have no clue what they stand for. If somebody says something and they're like, yeah, and they're not really enthusiastic about it, they're not going to stand up. So why waste life? Life is so precious. Yes. Why waste it?
Yes.
And all these surveys you have from HR organizations, how 70% of the employees in the United States are disengaged and whatnot. And you know what? It's horrible. Like, why would you want to? An employee, a workforce that's like that. Why would anyone want to be in a company that they don't want to work for?
Yep. Jeff and I are battling against that 70%.
Yeah, exactly. And for me, I've had a huge transformation in the past year too. With COVID hitting and people having different work needs, working from home, mm-hmm. et cetera. And my publishing the book and taking some time towards promoting the message behind the book and whatnot, I had several team members who basically left. And I replaced them with wonderful, amazing people who are really super happy to be there and work for my firm. And so and just one of them who left, the moment that she left, it was like this energy that was so negative and depressing almost for everybody in the office. It was just a breath of fresh air. It just lifted and everybody's happy again. It's just amazing. What even one bad apple or some just one person who's no longer happy there for whatever reason can do.
So Karen used a phrase that I haven't heard a lot. You talked about emotional mastery. Certainly most people have heard about emotional intelligence. You know, people talk about self-awareness. Talk more, a little bit more about what do you see as emotional mastery and why does it matter?
Wow. So emotional mastery is a part, the emotional intelligence. So knowing how you feel, why you feel a certain way, how another person is feeling. So developing empathy and still working on it. Because we're not mind readers, and absolutely all of that. But the mastery to me is also how do you respond and how do you work on your mindset to master that? And so, for example, if I have a crazy irate client calling and I'm like, blah, 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 and I start screaming and starts, I can choose to get annoyed. I can choose to get angry. I can choose to deflect. I could choose, let's blame the government because the government's been taking so long and whatnot. And so I have all these choices. I can choose sometimes to say to the client, you know, sir, I understand you're really upset and it's taking a long time. And we're doing everything that we can to expedite your visa. But the consulate is closed right now. There's nothing we can do. And so if you want to calm down and we can talk about another option, maybe there's going to be an option to process your visa at a third country or something like that. Let's do it right now. If they start continue to scream or whatnot, you say, well, let's reschedule it for another time when you're less upset. and that's fine because whatever I say is not going to get through.
Right.
And so I'm not getting caught up with anger, deflection, blame. No. I'm not going down that rabbit hole. I'm keeping my calm and I'm offering a solution. And if the other party doesn't want to play along, that's fine, but it doesn't affect how I behave, or it's not going to affect my day.
So good. Yes. We have choices on how we respond.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, those with emotional mastery have choices on how to respond.
Well, and most people really go down the rabbit hole because they're peeved at that moment, or, and I'm not saying it's justified, but a lot of people, for example, just need to vent.
Yeah.
And so you can choose whether you want to let them vent or whether you want to stop and just say, I see you're upset right now, or I hear you're upset. Let's go ahead and reschedule the call for tomorrow.
So I'm really curious, Karen, you've clearly made a personal commitment, whether it started that way or not, to work on yourself and personal development, inside development and growth. To what degree is that a part of the culture of your business for the people on your team?
It's very much a culture in the business. So we have a weekly meeting, not just to talk about things that are going on in the office, but developing emotional mastery in every one of the employees. And some of it is very raw and very difficult emotionally for some people to handle, especially some employees are very closed off. They're very personal and private, and they don't want to talk about those issues, especially in the workplace. And I've had some resistance over time for this. But I think that overall, just having the information and practicing it improves your emotional mastery in a very, very meaningful way. And it helps you to be a better professional. It helps you be a better teammate. It helps you be a better human being, a better family person. So it's great.
Yeah.
And it's, the irony is, the people who have been resisting it the most are the people who need the most help.
Well, there's a shock.
Yes. Yes. Blind spot.
And so, you know, just as an example, like some of the tools that we've worked on to deal with anxiety in the past year, because COVID has taken anxiety level to the next step. And I have almost an all female team here in the States. And so usually the go-to emotion for females is anxiety. Go-to emotion for males usually is anger. And so if you compound personal anxiety, kids at home, trying to do some work, and COVID, and you can't go out anywhere, and you have to wear a mask, and you can't see your friends, and you can't see your family, and all that, I mean, it's a disaster waiting to happen. And so how do you get the mastery not to get in that rabbit hole of anxiety? How do you stop yourself when you start thinking, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? And 5,000 COVID cases in my state this week, or yesterday, today, blah, blah, blah. They're saying this. And then how do you stop yourself?
Stop watching the news.
That's a very good tip. That's absolutely, absolutely true. Absolutely true. But part of it is, you know, it's the self-fulfilling loop. If you watch the news, you're going to get more worried about it.
Yeah.
You're going to watch more because you want more information, but you get more down the rabbit hole of just being more worried and anxious and sad and mad and all that.
Well, I'm not surprised, but I'm really grateful to hear that you are creating that culture because, I mean, I know some leaders who don't do the inside work at all. They think they're done or it's bullshit. And then there's some who do their work, but it's not really part of the culture. And, you know, Craig and I are constantly encouraging organizations and leaders, you know, provide people with tools. And, you know, my short soapbox rant is, you know, we've got a mental health crisis and COVID made it worse. And as much time people spend engaged in work, I guess my call to action is for organizations and leaders to be a part of the solution.
Yeah.
And not leave it to the people. Say, well, go figure that out on your time. Why can't we be part of that solution in the workplace? And I think what you're doing is part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can tell you, it increased productivity in my office, and it increased the well-being of the employees. It increased collaboration within the team. Because you can read all the leadership books, and they all tell you the same thing. The best performing teams have trust. they can be exposed and vulnerable and be themselves without the fear of judgment. Mm-hmm. And the diversity, the debate, even saying things that are difficult to hear, as long as there's trust and there's knowledge that I'm not telling Jeff something because I want to harm him, but I see something that I think he can improve on, and I'm doing it from a good place in my heart, makes all the difference. And it promotes the trust and team building and all of that. And you can't really have a disengaged employee in that situation because they're going to be fully committed.
Right. Or they're going to self-select out.
Right. Exactly. And if they self-select, it's great because they're not really a fit with your culture anyway.
Right.
And so it's fine either way.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, Karen. You know, I'm going to go, it's funny to call this old school because back in the day it was the school, and it was Jim Collins, Good to Great. Mm-hmm. And one of the things he talked about was with people, the idea of hiring slow and firing fast. And I remember he had two real key questions. He said, look at people on your team and say, if I had to do it all over again, would I hire them again?
Yes.
If the answer is yes, keep going. If the answer is no, it's time to make a change.
Yes.
And the other is, if they come in and tell you they're leaving, are you disappointed or are you relieved? And if the answer is you're relieved, it's time to make a change. And what I find fascinating is he also said that when someone leaves that you go, wow, that's good for us, then we failed, is kind of his comment. That, you know, we knew that and we hesitated in some reason. So I'm curious how you look at that, because you've had people leave.
Yes.
Do you look at that and say, could we have done something sooner? Did we have a miss? How do you learn from the process of people leaving, I guess, is the question.
So we do an exit interview with every person who leaves, and we ask them some good questions about what we did right. We ask them what we didn't do right, why they left, and how was the culture fit for them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so we learn a lot from the exit interviews. And some things that were personal to me, for example, like with writing the book and devoting more time to that and whatnot, mm-hmm. I could choose to take it very hard and very personal, because it is very personal and it's a personal choice of mine. And I could choose to say, okay, they fit at some point in time, they don't fit anymore, and really thank them for the time of that they've spent with us and how they enriched us, and move on. And if there's something that we need to improve, absolutely, we'll work on improving it. Absolutely. And I've taken some suggestions from people who left that we're implementing now.
So one thing I want to ask you about, Karen, and it ties to your book. I find that kind of, as I'm asking this, I'm thinking, this is interesting. So one of my takeaways from your book, and I listened to it on audio, so I got some of the tonality.
Oh, cool.
Right? You're a very direct person.
Absolutely.
That's a compliment. I mean, you're honest and direct, and people love to say brutally honest. I said, what does that mean? Why do you have to be brutal? But you're direct, you're concise. I'm reading the book going, wow, that was, and I'm listening, you share stories about some of your people you dated. And I thought, wow, that's just right there. And then I would call them clean arrows.
Yes.
They were arrows. They may have landed sharply, but they were clear and clean and just direct. So I'm guessing you show up the same way in your leadership.
Yes.
I guess. And my question is, how has that worked and not worked with your team? And when it didn't work, what did you learn about them or yourself?
So the being totally direct and totally honest. And when I say totally honest, it's really totally honest. Sometimes I won't say everything that I think to someone or to an employee, not to hurt somebody's feelings, to a degree that it would maybe sound mean and whatnot. But I'll refine it a little bit. If it's an employee or a friend or somebody who I've known for a long time, but I'm not going to be I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. And if somebody's not performing, we're going to have a conversation about why they're not performing and what they need to do to improve. And we're going to benchmark by when they're going to improve, and we're going to check it. But that's been done. And so in the business world, especially in corporate America, things are not as direct. They're not as honest. And part of the problem is a lot of times people get promoted or moved around departments where they don't fit. And with my business, because it's not a huge business, it's either adapt or die. You either fit or you don't. And so I have the responsibility to my business, to my clients, and to my employees, you know, to the other 13. If somebody's messing things up, everybody else has to pick up the slack, or everybody else is going to get hurt by this. So I think after people kind of get to know me more, over working with me over a period of time, they appreciate the honesty. They appreciate the opportunity to self-develop, to grow, and also to contribute to the team. And for somebody who's not growth-oriented, somebody who wants security and a paycheck, my law firm is not the right fit for them.
Right.
So they can go and look for another job.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely fine.
Do you have the same communication style with clients?
Yes.
Good.
So, and clients actually love it because if I say to a client, hey, if we do this way, your visa is not going to get approved versus, hey, give me your money. I'm going to try it and maybe it's going to get approved or not, but I'm going to take your money anyway.
Right.
They really appreciate the honesty and they appreciate the advice and what we can do to make things better, to make sure that we have a higher likelihood of success in the case. And we have close to 100% approval rate because of that.
Awesome.
You know, it's an interesting thing about this conversation. The more we go into this, I'm realizing how much your dating book is really about business leadership and personal development, because what I would also highlight that doesn't get talked about a lot, and this is what I remember of the book, Karen, that feedback, let's call it feedback, that just honest with people.
Yes.
What I remember about it was two keys, which I think is critical to feedback in the workplace. One is there were very few judgments in it. There was a few where it was so outrageous. There was a judgment about the person, but it was more an observation of the behavior that you were being honest about. And the second part, it was about you, in the sense of that your behavior doesn't work for me.
Right.
It wasn't you're a jerk. And I think in the workplace, so often the feedback is too many judgments. You're not pulling your way. You're lazy. And it's this label on the person. It's not getting to the behavior that needs to change.
Yeah.
Right.
There's some real wisdom in that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a personal attack. So if I say, Jeff, you're so lazy, why did you finish this project the last 10 days?
Right.
You're immediately on the defensive. You're immediately going to close your mind. You're going to immediately be, oh, they're attacking me and they're hating me, and I'm not going to give this company my 100% because they already made the judgment and I'm no good.
And when I get home, I'm going to kick the dog.
Yeah. Or, you know, vent at something or at a human that right. happens to be there. And, you know, so the being judging of the situation, of behaviors, and making a conclusion because of that, versus being judgmental towards the person. Because maybe just I don't know, Jeff is a great employee and he had a rough week. I don't know. He had some personal issues going on, or he had some other things going on, health issues. Who knows?
And that's where you can ask questions and check in and make sure that they're okay.
Absolutely. So, hey, Jeff, like I noticed in the last 10 days that your work has been kind of lagging and you haven't really finished the project on time. And and whatnot. And is something going on? Do you need help with anything? Are you overwhelmed? You know, that's a much better, coming from compassion and empathy and trying to understand. It's another thing, try to understand before being understood.
Right.
It's a great paradigm to live by. And that is a whole different conversation versus, Jeff, you're lazy. Why the hell didn't you finish this project on time?
Well, and I think, you know, it's funny because you added tone right there, but a lot of people, you don't even need the tone. And so many people will say, my issue is I'm just too direct. And typically what I'll say is, my guess is you're too judgmental or something like that, because we hide behind honesty sometimes. There are some abusive leaders who hide behind honesty. And I think that's part of the conversation that Craig and I want to continue to open up, to get beyond the high level, what's the word, but what does that actually mean? And I'm glad we got there. Yeah. And again, I'm walking out of this conversation saying, you know what, if you want to grow your business and grow your leadership, go read Matched. And by the way, just don't, if you are in a relationship, don't let your partner see it or explain it ahead of time, because that's probably not going to go well if they find it. They find it on the nightstand. Why are you reading this dating book? Well, I want to be a better leader. There's so much in there. And Karen, you're just killing it.
Thank you so much. And it's also helping people to become better partners. I've had several friends who read it, who are in committed long-term marriages or relationships. Yep. And they say it has tools in it for me. It has a toolkit for me to help being a better husband, being a better wife, understand why I chose my husband and wife in the first place. And so it's great.
Awesome. Well, it really is. I'm glad you brought that up. It definitely does. It has a lot about how to have more helpful conversations with your partner, how to bring up topics in a way that the people are probably more open to hearing that. It's the book that solves all the issues of the world, right? Let's just say that. So if you need immigration help, you're going to reach out to Weinstock Immigration Lawyers. If you want to change the world, you're going to read Matched. Does that work? I mean, I think it's accurate.
That's a great tagline. Can I steal it, Jeff?
It's yours. You wrote the book. The book. Karen, guys, so thankful that you came in today. I knew it would be fun, engaging, and insightful. And I even left with some things I didn't have walking in here. And I always love doing that. And we're just grateful for you being here, Karen.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff and Craig. I really, really enjoyed this. Thank you so much.
So, Karen, we always want to make sure our guests have a chance to promote anything that's going on for you. So what is that for you beyond the book? We've nailed the book.
So really, the book is going to be a beginning point. The next step is for me to do a coaching program online, like an online course. On dating and relationship that kind of complements the book.
Okay.
And that's going to be available at the book's website, which is Matched, M-A-T-C-H-E-D, matchedthebook.com. And I'm going to be working on that this summer. And hopefully by the fall, it's going to be available. So I'm really excited about that. And because it's going to be more interactive, and it's just going to be a video series for the book, Dating, Relationships, and Beyond.
Awesome.
Wonderful. And what's the best way for people to connect with you, Karen?
So on the law firm website, we are at visa-pros.com. And so my email is there. All my information is there. LinkedIn, I'm at Karen Weinstock. Very easy to find if you want to find me.
Awesome. And we always wrap up with a question. The question I want to ask you about, Karen, is you have an opportunity to have dinner with someone who's living. Who do you want to have dinner with? And what's the one question you're going to make sure to ask them?
So for me, my dream guest would be Stephen Hawking, because the man is so brilliant that I just want to just pick his brain about any question that I have.
Yeah.
And just watch it. Just watch him go. I mean, it's a very attractive quality to have. I think in any person, whether male or female. So.
Well, thank you for that, Karen. Thank you for being here again. And as we tell all our guests, thank you for the work you're doing out there. And the things coming away from me is what a awesome opportunity to be part of your team. To have someone who walks the talk and is committed to help, if I'm on your team, helping me grow as a person and as a professional and have a richer, happier life. That doesn't get any better than that. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
If you enjoy the Leadership Junkies podcast and you want to grow your leadership, we have a new course for you called Become a Confident Leader. In this course, we will share some of the keys to becoming more confident in your leadership and also to become more impactful. Go to cartavera.com/confident to find out more. See you on the inside.
Welcome, change agents, to your go-to place for stories that ignite your spirit, fuel your purpose, and connect us all. We believe in the incredible power of the human spirit, its boundless resilience, and the inspiration it brings to our lives. On the Driving Change podcast, we'll journey together through the extraordinary yet very relatable experiences of some of the most amazing people on earth. Our mission? That through these stories, we might just spark change within you and awaken a newfound motivation to harness your unique gifts to make a real difference in the world. So get ready to be inspired and join us on this incredible adventure. You can find the Driving Change podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you love listening to your favorite podcasts.